So I'll just give you a little background. I'm from the Veterans Rural Health Resource Center, Eastern Region in White River Junction, Vermont. And I'm not going to be talking about veterans, though. I'm going to be talking about knee replacement surgery and whether rural patients, among others, are accessing this treatment equitably. My co-author on this is Enong Young-soo, who has the distinction of being the person who did the statistics for the Living to 100 calculator. And all he, funny thing, he says, you know, that's a bunch of junk. The only thing I know that if you were alive today, you were probably alive yesterday. So my support comes from the VRHRC Eastern Region. And first I'm going to talk about how big the problem is in terms of knee arthritis, in particular knee osteoarthritis. The prevalence is about 4.7% as of 2004 of knee osteoarthritis in particular. And the CDC didn't have very good information on knee osteoarthritis, so I've got a little information on just general arthritis here. A lot of Americans suffer from it, and especially if you're obese, you have a greater chance of suffering from arthritis. More women than men report doctor-diagnosed arthritis, a big proportion of both, though. About 44% of adults with arthritis report no leisure time physical activity, and that's compared with 36% of adults without arthritis. So none of us are exercising enough, but especially if you've got arthritis, it limits you. About a third of adults under 64 have who are still working report work problems related to arthritis, and a pretty significant proportion of people have actually severe psychological distress related to arthritis, and it's very expensive. In 2003, and this is old data, the U.S. Attributed cost to arthritis was about $128 billion, up. Almost, not quite twice, but, significantly from 1997. So just in terms of disability, arthritis is the largest, it is associated with the largest amount of disability. And in particular, again, there's this association with obesity. If your body mass index is high, you're definitely more likely to suffer from arthritis. This is a little map that shows percent obesity, how these two are related. These are just by state, the percent obesity and the percent rurality. You can see this big swath in the middle there and the southeast where they're both highly prevalent. And interesting, I thought, was this is a different source, but the prevalence of arthritis sort of mimics this big swath. So what happens with osteoarthritis? On the left is a healthy knee, and you can see there's a nice big joint space there. When you have osteoarthritis, that joint space narrows because these nice cushions of cartilage get worn down to almost nothing, and you get bone on bone. When you get bone on bone, these osteophytes or bone spurs develop to try to support and spread, make that space bigger again. When you get bone on bone like that, it hurts. It sends a lightning bolt type pain up and down your leg bones, and you don't want to put weight on your leg bones when that happens because it hurts. So there are some things that you can do if you've got osteoarthritis. You can lose weight, and you can minimize activities that aggravate the condition. Unfortunately, these are almost mutually exclusive. If you can't move, then you're not going to probably lose weight. You can exercise, again, to increase your range of motion and to strengthen your muscles, because the stronger your muscles are, the less your bone in particular has to support. You can use supportive devices, canes, inserts. I don't know if you guys were at the exhibitors hall. They had those those great massaging inserts. That doesn't do anything for your knees, unfortunately. You can wear a brace. You can do things to help the pain, like put on, you know, ice and heat. And then there, you can use pharmacotherapy, and the things that we use mostly are nonsteroidals, COX-2 inhibitors, steroids, injections, and then glucosamine chondroitin. That's gotten a lot of good press in the last, 10, 15 years. And then more recently, they've started injecting with the hyaluronic acid, the same stuff that they, the same stuff that they use for dermal fillers for your, lips and wrinkles and things. Now they're having, this sort of thicker type that they inject in your joints, and that kind of replaces temporarily the cartilage that's being worn down. And then there's surgical treatment, knee replacement surgery, otherwise known as arthroplasty. And what they do is they, sort of shave off, some on either end of the bone where the knee joint is, and insert this titanium joint, and the titanium joint has a little plasticky thing that serves as cartilage, and it works great. I have one. So we wanted to know who's getting this surgery, who's accessing it, and is everyone who needs it getting it? So we looked at the NIS hospital discharge data set, which shows discharge diagnoses and resource use. It looks at about 20% of U.S. hospital admissions. It's a big and well-validated data set. We also used for our denominator to see prevalence, the who needs it part, the 2006 National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey, NAMCS. And we looked specifically at those patients who were seen for knee pain and had a diagnosis of arthritis. So for our denominator, that's what we used from the NAMCS. And for our numerator, we used knee replacement surgery from the NIS, looking at ICD-9 procedure code 81.54. We want to look at first access and non-emergent access, so we didn't look at revisions or emergent surgery. We just looked at those knee surgeries that were the first-time knee replacement surgeries. We looked at these variables and did univariate, multivariate, nested logistic regression, gender, race, income level, age and at three different levels, insurance status, comorbidities using the Charlson Index, and locale, rural and urban. Both the NIS and the NAMCS allow you to look at, they've got, four and five level rural-urban codes that you can look at. We separated them just into two. So we looked at prevalence of knee arthritis from the U.S. population, again, using the outpatient visits for knee arthritis from the NAMCS divided by the total U.S. population for the same year. We looked at proportion of patients with arthritis who received knee replacement surgery, looking at, from the NIS, patients undergoing arthroplasty for the first time divided by the outpatient visits from the NAMCS again. And not surprisingly, we found some variables that, were very, more likely to be associated with knee replacement surgery. First, age greater than 60, because, the older they get, the more likely you are to have this. And for the same reason, Medicare patients were far more likely to have knee replacement surgery than patients with other kinds of insurance. So we look at odds ratio first of all, and found among variables that predicted for knee replacement surgery, besides those two that I just mentioned, being white as opposed to being of any other race, having a higher income or income higher than 60,000 compared to any lower income, having more comorbidities, because the sicker you are, the more likely people are to say, yeah, you really need this. And being urban. So here, in terms of which, sort of additive types of variables. If you're a rich, older white female with no comorbidities, and a Medicare patient, you were most likely to get this surgery. However, remember we said that women were much more likely to have this, far more likely to have knee osteoarthritis, and yet males are almost as likely to get knee replacement surgery even with all those same variables. If you're a non-white male, you're somewhat less likely. Again, these are older, urban, rich white males with who are sick, not sick other than their knee arthritis. If you're older and non-rich white, it's almost half as you're almost half as likely. So being non-rich really drops you down. If you have a comorbidity, sorry, I couldn't think of anything I could do in one slide additionally. So say you've got alcohol-related something or other, then you're a bit less likely to get knee replacement surgery. Again, now this just to go back, remember I said three or more is gonna predict for greater. But if you have, it's a little more complicated than that. On this, I just did one or more comorbidity. So older, rich, non-rich, non-white with one or more comorbidity, it drops down. And then if you're rural, you only have a 16% chance of getting a knee replacement surgery compared to all those other variables. And it drops again if you're non-white and rural. So you can see here there's a need access mismatch. For instance, women are 70% more likely to have knee osteoarthritis, but only equally likely to get the surgery. Whites non-whites are about 10% more likely to have knee osteoarthritis, but 40% less likely to get the surgery. If you're poor, you're 10% more likely, but 40% less likely to get it. And if you're rural, you're twice as likely to have knee osteoarthritis, but 80% less likely to get it. So of all these variables, who, when they walked in here, thought that being rural predicted most likely for not getting that surgery? Okay, well, you know what you're coming into, though. So here are the take-home points. Population segments who are most in need of getting this surgery are least likely to, including women, minorities, economically disadvantaged, and rural. And rurality poses an additional barrier to access because if you can get it, you might not be able to, and all you have is Medicare or Medicaid, they might not pay for it if it's not a high-performing hospital. And if you have more comorbidities, you may need a high-performing hospital. So, again, that's another barrier. So we've got some limitations here. We used an administrative database. There are always limitations for that. Both of these, though, were large and well validated, but not all states were represented. And then we also don't know what other factors are involved. All we looked at is one diagnosis. We also don't know patient preferences. We know that minorities and rural patients are less likely to get certain surgeries, even if they have the option of getting them. So we don't know how many people were offered this surgery and just decided not to get it. We also don't know outcomes. I mean, maybe they made the right choice by not getting it. So our conclusions are that significant knee arthritis causes disability, morbidity, poor quality of life, and increased health costs. So if they can be reduced by getting knee replacement surgery when they need it, then all appropriate candidates should be able to access this. I did want to mention, too, this is the end of my talk, but there was an article that came out not too long ago looking at rural-urban Medicare patients and how Medicare patients were more likely, or rural Medicare patients were more likely to get knee replacement surgery than urban Medicare patients. Does anyone have an idea about that? I have an idea. So what I think happens is that rural patients, we know, are less likely to have private insurance. So I think what happens is you wait and wait and wait if you're rural until you get to be 65 and get on Medicare, and then you get the surgery. So I think what that study forgot to look at is you know, sort of the relative need at the point of surgery. It's a hard thing to look at. But we're in the process of looking at 64-year-olds compared to 65-year-olds in this database and another database, because really you should just see a sort of linear trend as opposed to a step-up trend. So anyway, I'll take questions. I'm going to have to leave early, so I'm not going to be here at the end. Yep?
I just had a quick question about what the criteria for being called rural was. Like, is it just population density or what?
Well, so they used the NAMCES and NIS data sets, divided them into, one uses 4 and one uses 5, and I can't remember which is which at the moment. But they look at things, not only population density, but also access to urban centers. It's so sort of a commuting area, a commuting ability. So if you live, say, it's better than population density for that reason, because you might live in a, you know, sort of rural area that's very affluent and the hospital's very close by, but your population density is low. Yep, Alan?
So first, a quick anecdote.
Yep.
Hopefully you. So I have knee pain, I live in an urban area, I have a choice of surgeons.
Uh-huh.
First surgery, by the way, let's do knee surgery. Which would be better. Second one says, let's be conservative about this. And it went away. My point is, your presentation was very clear. You had one bullet there that almost hinted what I'm getting at. What if the rate of surgery is lower because the availability of providers is much lower in rural areas than urban? So, you know, the tendency in urban areas to do too much surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe those ratios on the urban side are too high or inappropriately high. And that I didn't see control for.
You know, that's an excellent point, and elective surgeries like this fall into that category of, I forget, you know, the guys at Dartmouth have these all separated into certain types of care, and this is it's a sort of the availability of surgeons determines the amount of care that you get, and certainly that's right. I would say, in general, if you're coming to a doctor because your knee's been aching and it's been a certain amount of time, and you look on the x-ray and you see those kind of changes, then I think you should consider the surgery. I'll tell from...
The surgery.
Huh?
I'm not against the surgery.
Yeah.
I'm talking about availability of supply.
The supply-sensitive demand is what it is, yeah. No, you're exactly right. This is the kind of surgery, though, that there are, you know, pretty much anywhere you can, there are orthopedic surgeons who can do this. It's, you know, their bread and butter.
That's what I mean, bread and butter.
Oh, okay, got it. Any other questions?
I have to be careful, she's a physician.
Yes. I don't think so. Hospitals are now publishing these, kind of safety reports on their websites. I'm not sure that they're doing it by surgeon. I suspect not.
Most surgeons know their own survival curves. If they're good surgeons, they have their own survival curves.
I'm not sure that they'll tell you, I only killed 5 people last year. You know, come to me. You know, still, the best way to know is to ask people who've been to that surgeon how their, you know, what their outcome is. And
the traditional traditional way.
The traditional way, you know, because that's the way you'll get the honest results. I can tell you who my surgeon was. I would definitely recommend. I run now. I was really at the point where I could not walk up or down a flight of stairs, and now, you know, I run, you know, 5 to 10 miles a day again. So I know they tell me not to, but that's how I got in the first place. All right, anything else?
Thank you.
Thanks.